of the crop.
Welcome to the 179th edition of the Gooner Podcast. This is your host, Kevin Witcher, and we are recording this on the Tuesday evening after Arsenal's draw at Crystal Palace, with the next fixture being at home to Sheffield United at the good old-fashioned kick-off time of 3 o'clock on a Saturday. So with plenty to discuss, let's introduce this evening's panel. First up, one of our regulars, a man who circulates with the Arsenal players in their natural habitat, at least those with homes in the NW3 area of North London. From recollection amongst his neighbours is a certain Freddie Lundberg. Editor of the Hampstead Village Voice, it's good evening to the man of a thousand names, Mr. Emmanuel Mustafa Goldstein.
Good evening.
Next up, a long-term Arsenal Supporters Trust board member, as well as a man heavily involved with the England cricket team's PR. So I'm looking at a suntanned face, untypical of these parts, as he's just returned from sunny South Africa, where the Test series is standing at 1-1 after England's win in Cape Town. Choosing Chile Highbury in preference to Port Elizabeth, it's a pleasure to say hello to Mr. Tim Payton.
Hello.
And last but not least, another man with long-standing involvement in the Arsenal Supporters Trust, for whom he still contributes financial analysis on the club's figures. So he's in a good position to inform us exactly of what the club are capable of doing, if anything, in the current transfer window. It's a warm welcome back to Mr. Simon Hill.
Evening.
Gentlemen, the last time we recorded the Gooner Podcast was in the second week of December. Freddie Lundberg was our caretaker stroke interim manager, and Mikel Arteta was on the list of names. Since then, he's come to the fore. He has basically, he's got the job for 2.5 years? 3.5 years.
Three and a half year contract.
So, you know, assuming things don't get very pear-shaped very quickly, we're going to be getting used to Arteta ball. What do we think of it so far?
Not bad. I mean, an improvement. I like the way he talks. I like the way you can understand what he says when he talks. Unlike his predecessor,
it's a low bar.
I could do the job.
It really was. I think Emery's downfall was his inability to get a grasp of the language and yet still try. Apart from other things as well, which will be mentioned, but Arteta so far a breath of fresh air. There seems to be at least a half in every game where we look like a football team, and there's that feeling of okay. They're having a go now. Albeit, if we remember, when Emery started, we did have a half every game there as well. There's a similar pattern. So it might be a false dawn. Let's see where we go. But at the moment, feel good factor is up on what it was. It's still a bit, but I think there's a personnel problem on the pitch as well. But that's another thing. We'll move on to that. It's what he's got to work with as well. But, yeah, feeling better.
All right. Qualified optimism, I think. Okay. So, have Arsenal got the right man?
I think they've got a better man than they had. And given they needed a new head coach mid-season, I think they probably did as... They made a good appointment. It wasn't the first choice. They went to Brendan Rodgers, who used the interest to double his money at Leicester. And then they would have been keen to take Pochettino, but he's on a very big earn out at Spurs, and I think he's waiting for a very, very big club that begins with the letter M in the summer. So after that, I think that Arteta was a strong choice. There's a little bit of risk in picking a fellow who's never managed a team in his life, and that was probably what did for him the first time round, the sense of being a rookie. He's kind of had half a bounce, hasn't he? And the performances have bounced more than the results. I don't think you can look at Arsenal over the last few games and have felt better. Felt they're trying harder, they're putting in more mileage, there's a bit more sense of purpose to it. But he's only got one league win out of five games since he's been around.
Four games.
Well, he...
Can you include Everton?
Well, I think he quite wisely chose to sit in the stands, so you couldn't be implicated with that one. But I agree with what was just said. I mean, whoever is head coach, there are some real structural failings at Arsenal that are going to take a while to unwind and sort out. And I mean, one of the encouraging things with Arteta is I think he will communicate in a way that we give him more time to sort those problems out.
Okay. Do you think that...
Don't I get to say anything?
Yes, please do.
I wouldn't have been here if he wasn't here. Let's put it that way. If we were still going with Emery, I wouldn't have come. Simple as that. You know my views on Emery.
You're having a big soap.
You know my views on Emery from the last time I was here in September and in May. I wanted him gone in May. I was just devastated he was still here in September. I shut myself away from all things Arsenal for 4 months until we went. And,
are you on a rebound then, though?
Am I a rebound?
Overly embracing now, anything because it's not Emery.
I am re-evaluating and reconsidering my attachment to Arsenal Football Club. I agree with pretty much everything you've said so far. I do think we are... there's some great analysis was done on the little changes he's made with his players and how we're letting in less shots, playing with a higher line, obviously trying to do things. And lots of little things that he's done seemingly very quickly that even Freddie struggled to do, and I think he's really been unlucky, which worries me a little bit, because like you sometimes get people who just are pretty unlucky. And you know, the disaster that was Chelsea in the last 7 minutes, and bless his face when he's like head in his hands, I just thought, oh,
but yeah, well, you cannot legislate for individual errors of that nature.
No, you can if they're called Mustafi.
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously he's not picking him. He was picking Mavropanos on the bench ahead of Mustafi, which kind of says that Mustafi is unlikely to play many games.
Yes.
But the Bernardino one, you know, I mean, he's brought in his own goalkeeper coach, and, you know, he's got work to do there. You know, I mean, that's the one
area. Possibly always known.
No, he's
probably been Arsenal's player of the season.
Wiser.
That mistake.
There's wiser bad luck as well, isn't it? I mean, Jorginho's in the middle of the pitch, yeah, not getting decisions from the ref or VAR working away. Yeah. And so it just feels that, like, we've left, you said something, we've got the points, we aren't getting the points that the performances probably have merited.
Well, I think also, I mean, that Chelsea game was a case in point. You know, the first half we went out blazing, great guns, looked really good, and we seem to be doing that. You know, it's like we'll either have a really good first half or a really good second half, but we don't seem to be able to.
Well, that's physical, isn't it?
A good sort of half, you know, half hour.
It's the intensity he is asking the players to perform at, and in a way, it's a condemnation of what has gone before. That are not fit enough to do it.
I think some of it's physical and some of it is mental too. I don't know, I'm yet to be convinced that two or three players on the pitch have what it takes up here in the upper half of the cerebral area to... Sometimes the focus isn't there, you know, and that might be...
Let's name names.
Okay, I'm going to make myself unpopular. Do we like that?
Yes, we do.
Okay, throw it. Shaka's one of them. Guendouzi.
But Arteta's begged him to stay.
I know. Guendouzi's someone
that... I actually think was the right thing to have done.
Well,
Xhaka's important to that team.
I think Xhaka's the opposite of a rabbit's foot for Arsenal. I just don't see him as an Arsenal man. Well, you know, this. If he takes a player on, he'll stand in front of them and it's all this...
Right.
Falling
what
over.
In 2020, in the current squad,
yeah,
is an Arsenal man? Give me some names.
Who are Arsenal men?
Yeah.
Well, you mean who aren't playing for us now?
Or no, who are?
Who are?
Who's an Arsenal man?
Because you've just condemned Xhaka for not being an Arsenal man.
I think that the only...
Give me a moment to think about that.
There is a big job coming. I think the only midfielder that will still be here in 18 months' time is Torreira.
Right.
The only one playing in Arsenal's first team. But I'm not so much into this Arsenal man or not anymore. I think it plays into sort of...
It's not
slightly
reality.
Old school culture. Yes.
No, not the reality of millionaire players on these
contracts. And I don't think...
Modern footballer might be more accurate.
Mercenary.
What I mean is a player who will...
Focus.
No, who won't do that? Someone who will play football, be on top of the game. If you look at Liverpool and you look at Man City and you look at...
I'll stop you there.
Teams, hang on.
Ray Parlour.
Yeah.
Okay. Will be regarded as an Arsenal man.
He is an Arsenal man.
But he doesn't have the quality necessary to play in a Man City or Liverpool team.
Yes, but the thing about Ray Parlour is, if he lost the ball and made a mistake, he'd chase back.
Yeah, so I'm redefining your view of what an Arsenal man needs to be.
Well, my view of an Arsenal man is someone who will fucking fight for the team. I mean, Arteta's an Arsenal man, I think, in the sense, well, he's certainly talking the talk, and he's trying to get that back into the squad so that players will go out and do play at their very best, stay on top of it and play an honest game, by which I mean all this falling over and winning. Whoa. Dirty. No, you're giving it that look. Oh. Sorry, I prefer, now and again, fine.
Isn't that what Arsenal have lacked in terms of game management? Since Patrick Vieira left.
I must say I do reject these kind of labels. I think basically it's are you good or are you not?
That's what I mean. Are you good enough?
And Arsenal don't have enough players that are good enough.
That's exactly what I mean.
And this is where now it's going to be really interesting to watch where Arteta goes. And we must remember Arteta is head coach. I've not been listening. Sometimes I'm on a kind of sort of emergency listen for it. People call him the manager. He's not. He's head coach. The decisions are taken by Raul Sanelli. There's Edu in there. They have got some huge work to do. Arteta's job is to squeeze as much as he can out of the squad that's there. They've got 2 weeks of a transfer window. Maybe they'll do something with it. Maybe they won't. It seems we're very reliant on agent mate deals at the moment. They've got the key striker who's scoring, 50% of the club's goals? But you know, heading towards a summer where he's almost certain to leave because he'll be in the final year of a contract. You've got to manage the psychology of that occurring on the team, on the fans. You've got Lacazette heading in with 2 years left. He should be sold if you stick to the pronouncements that were made. You've got Xhaka. Now, I think it was right of Arteta, but a bit of me was nervous. Is it Arsenal to turn around and beg a player to stay who's lined up a deal to go? I think we needed him more than not. I see all his flaws, but if he went, I'd say it'd only be a weaker midfielder in the next 5 months.
You've got
Ozil, who quite, you know, it's the biggest, you know, piece of piss, waste of space, overpaid Sorry. Show pony there's Come been. On. Did I get enough fake words in there at once?
No.
But it's been carried, you know, but we've got to try and make the best because it's 350k a week.
Well,
he's even managed to totally kill off the option of putting him in the Chinese market, hasn't he? Not, I'm sure that was all manufactured by the agents. Just be rude about the Chinese, then they can't send you there for the final
get
year
realistic.
Contract.
Get realistic. December, we were nearer the bloody relegation zone than anywhere else.
We still
else,
are
right?
now.
Right, okay. You miss the Europa League next season, you've got a 30 million plus hole in our finances. We are fucked.
Which is
royally fucked.
Which is why our okay? tender's got
So it's an emergency. And in an emergency, you deal with what you've got to
do. Of course you do.
You can't sit there and say, oh, I fancy that guy.
No, but what I'm...
I was calling for Sam.
I'm agreeing with you, Simon. But what I'm saying is what's going to be so fascinating is he's got to kind of deal with an emergency and get the most out of it as he can. But within that, you've got to be strategising for some big work that needs doing in the summer. And that's coming at you anyway.
Someone's got to be
They're dealing with it at that level. But where Arteta's got to deal with it is there will be players' agents briefed about, you know, about where they're going, the psyche of certain players who won't try very hard in a game because they want out. And Arteta's got to manage all of this. Like you say, he's also, what's going to be fascinating, which basket does Arteta put his eggs in? Would you throw everything at the Europa League to try and secure that Champions League place? Would you concentrate on coming between 5th, 6th and 7th to get Europa League so you don't totally fall out of the basket? Would you go quite hard at an FA Cup because it will win favour from fans?
And it'll get you in the Europa League.
It does get you in the Europa League. You know, because I'm convinced that if you ask Emery his biggest regret of all, it was that he didn't prioritise between Europa League and Premier League last season.
Well, he sort of did.
But I bet you where he kicks himself every game was that home game where he kind of dropped a couple of the players that would normally have started waiting for the semi-final.
Palace.
And we were one
and
point short.
He had a brain fart.
He ended up 1 point short in the Premier League and a second half in the final short. And I bet you he wishes he hadn't kind of tried to ride both horses.
so far on. Arteta's got to make that judgment, because Simon will point out, and people don't like this, but the judgment has to be how you maximise the finances for next year. Do you have a chance of getting yourself out of the situation where you are?
It's just silly. I mean, Arteta's basically at the moment, he's just trying to get belief into his squad. He's just trying to deal with whatever he's got. You can see it, and he's doing fantastically well. He's turned Xhaka around. Guendouzi looks a bloody better player. Guendouzi can actually do some things defensively in the box, and he's switched on a little bit. Mate, Lenars is it. Okay, yeah, we're talking about players that didn't get switched off. Yes, Luiz had a little brain fart, and Kolasinac did the other day. You know, but you can see everyone has stepped up, and he's been absolutely clear about the one thing he said from day one, and it's clear on those plays, is the one thing you do is you bust your nuts for me.
Yes.
And you follow my instructions. If you don't, yeah, that's it.
And actually, right. Even Ozil is busting half a gap.
Ozil's doing more distance than anyone else in an Arsenal shirt in the last two
years. Yeah, but
games.
Anyone can run up and down a bit.
11 kilometres.
Yeah, but
Lee Dixon taught me about how you could.
You've always had
this. Okay, I think there's one thing that we've got to bear in mind.
It's a side joke.
They're all busting a gut at the moment because he's the new manager, and they've got, and he said, you know, it's my way or the highway, and they've all gone, oh, yes, sir. Now, there will come a point where things sort of level off a bit, and it all comes a bit. And again, they'll go into their self-entitled millionaire in a Range Rover mode. That's what I mean by Arsenal man. Is it someone who will consistently bust a gut for this team over a whole season?
Is part of the reason that Arteta was brought to the club because of his reputation of improving young talent? Because isn't that where we are now?
Yes.
Probably. Economically. So my thought on that is, if there is drop-off, he will start using more.
Mm. Well, I'm not sure you're right there, in that Arteta can't have a reputation for anything, in that he's never been a head coach anywhere before.
But his reputation was for improving players.
Well, where?
Well, I mean, it's well publicised. The players have said
Sterling,
Sane and Sterling have said,
but in a different role.
What role?
Well, he'd never been head coach, so he didn't have a reputation as a head coach of doing
that. No, but
that.
His coaching is coaching. Well, if you're going to tell a player what to do,
why didn't we bring him in and give him that role rather than give him a different role to the one you said he's got a good reputation in?
Probably because he wouldn't have taken the job.
Well, there you go. But I mean, I half agree with you. I think what they've done is gone for this new style of young, progressive coach that is much more about getting alongside the players. He's got a very, you know, the whole style, in effect, it's Guardiola light, isn't it?
Absolutely.
It's everything from at the end of the game, you're on the pitch, every player gets a hug. I mean, Wenger never did any of that. He backed his players 100%, but they didn't do that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. They've gone for this new wave of bright young thing, you know, studies the game, passionate, works hard, believes in coaching, believes in making people better. It's kind of Guardiola light. I think they've clearly gone for that in a way they couldn't. There was nothing else to go for.
That they could afford,
or was available now. But also, it does fit Arsenal's profile a bit. Where I think that the absolute key bit isn't so much going to be Arteta. It's going to be Raul and Edu. It's going to be the work they do with contract renewals, with signings, with loans, with who we don't sell because we actually want them to stay. That is going to determine Arsenal's next two or three years much more. And on their first year of operating, I'm far from convinced.
It's a nightmare. Rule, like I said it before, say it again, keep saying it. Rule's given more power than Wenger. He's Wenger and Gazidis combined. He's got all the money. He's got control over the football, theoretically. Yeah, we waited how long until we got Edu? Edu strolls in the summer. Really low profile, under the radar he comes in. And then suddenly when Arteta's here, it's like, oh, me and Edu, we chatted away. Me and Gaspar, we were like buddies. We sparked and it was like, okay, great. Something's happened there. But with Rule sat over the ship that went for Emery instead of Arteta in the first place. Must have been a big part of that decision,
along
with the dreaded Gazidis. Yeah, and then presided over a summer on his own, pretty much, that resulted in us spending 140 million quid on Pepin, Tierney and Saliba. One player who's back at loan in his old club, one player who's knick-knacked, and one player who's clearly the best, massively light of what he needs to be at to play as a Premier League frontline player in a team that wants to play that sort of football. I mean, he's not a Sterling or a Sane, is he? Pepper's not in near it. And that's what we put all our money on. Okay, yes, we've got Martinelli. I think we said earlier, before the podcast, you know, maybe it's the way rules contactless works. You pay a £70 million for an overvalued Pepe and you get a Martinelli who's like probably worth £30 million already.
It's very agent driven now. One of the things, you know, I don't like at all is to see the super agents sitting in the Arsenal box. Who on earth is keeping keeping an eye on that? But it's not just about big dough. I mean, look at David Luiz, who, you know, again, you might say we had to find someone, but, you know, that was all manufactured by Kia Zubikan. Kia Zubikan, who's the super agent who sits in our box, just happens to be Luiz's agent. I did laugh the other day when I saw David Luiz come out and say how Arteta was the greatest thing since sliced bread. If you actually read what he said, it's exactly what he said about Frank Lampard the day before he handed in a transfer request at Chelsea. take it with a large pinch of salt. But one of the things, Simon has been asking me, looking at the Arsenal's figures, where's a little bit of the money going? It doesn't quite reflect the fees. Absolutely convinced that when we start seeing the agents' fees that Arsenal are paying, which have to be published, there's going to be a significant upswing in the agent fees because we have started giving them money. But I guess there is that argument, if you want to succeed in the game, you've got to pay them. Liverpool are paying more agents' fees than anybody at the moment.
Always the criticism of Wenger's that we wouldn't play the big place, so it just left Arsenal to always say, could have had him if I wanted you.
Because
you didn't have the agents.
On a light note, I think if Arteta can manage David Luiz and Guendouzi to stay switched on as much as they do care about their hair. I noticed them on the pitch doing their hair. Why don't they tie it back?
It's that kind of in-depth analysis we get
you
laugh and you mock. Arsenal man would tie it back.
Get a fucking haircut.
I did notice when Guendouzi came on. When Guendouzi came on against Palace, he wetted his hair.
Yes.
So perhaps he was under instruction from the bench to wet his hair.
Hair to stop it flying in his eyes. And then I see David Luiz on the pitch at a corner, and he's doing his hair and stuff instead of marking the man he's marking. And these little moments in football, one little take your eye off the ball for a second to do a bit of makeup, and guess what? 1-0 the other team.
No, I mean, the nuts, to come back to subject matter, is, you know, rule is a real massive concern for me. Edo, to me, is an unknown. Was he involved in us getting Martinelli? If he was, well, then hats off.
I think he'd already been.
Edo was going to take that job for maybe a couple of months before he took the post. Yeah. And in that time, he was obviously in Brazil. And I think I can't remember. There is some connection with Martinelli's people between Edu and Martinelli.
Well, there's another lad that we're meant to be linked with in Brazil at the moment.
I think this is partly why Edu has been brought in.
So why? Definitely.
Yeah. Right. Cheap South American players to be sold in 3 years' time.
But Raul was not brought into Arsenal to do the role he's now doing.
No, he's not.
He was brought in because Arsenal were worried that there is this sort of group of clubs trying to create a European Super League. It will be awful for the game and where it's heading, but it's out there, the ECA big clubs. And Raul is right in the middle of that network, and he was given the brief of make sure Arsenal are invited into this Super League, whatever
happens. There's going to be 5 English teams in this Super League.
Well, one of the reasons that Arsenal are sniffy about the current proposal, although they'd love it. Stan Kroenke does not care about the number of European games that are played, about sharing wealth so that you have a good competition, about all the things that we would care about.
But it's dead. Redistribution at the moment, that is dead.
No, that proposal is dead, but not the others behind the scenes. But one of the reasons, and I think maybe Agnelli made a mistake here, was he proposed five places for English teams, and there were six big clubs at the moment, and three or four of them were nervous. If he'd offered six places, they'd have gone like that. But do not, I do, well, I mean, Cronky does not care for the custodianship or the future of English or European football and all of that, but that is what Raoul is primarily there for. And actually, to, you know, so that I'm not, you know, it's not always hindsight, you know, he does know the super agents, and Arsenal had a weakness there. So having someone that works in that field probably was something you need in a big club.
I just see it's just been, I can't see anything good from Raoul at all, except for the fact that we've finally now ended up with Eze and Arteta, and they might be all right together. The rest of it, the signings, the summer before, was he around for the summer? Any of those signings? Am I really casting him a disservice?
He's been at the club officially since February 2018.
What worries me?
Yeah, exactly.
This is back to the AST remit, isn't it, Simon? Is who holds him to account? Where's the governor? Who is there?
Hang on. Let's just bring in the idea, the concept of the board of directors. Does it have any role to play in the organisation that Arsenal have become since Stan Kroenke became 100% owner
of
the club?
It has an important role to play, whether it's doing it, particularly when you've got absentee owners that live in the States, you need a check and balance to your executives from your board, the non-executive role to hold people like Raoul and Edu to account, sometimes to support, sometimes to challenge. That would be done by a good quality board in London. But what, the board in London is 85 years old, 79 years old and 76
years old. It's doing well to survive, isn't it?
Well, you mean what, get up
each day?
I'm astonished. I do
consult a doctor.
The Gooner should do a satirical spoof on the, I don't know if anyone's watched Succession with
Nolan
Roy.
Yeah, I love it.
And the old guy's just voting for him and whatever. But, I mean, you know, that's the sort of board we've got for him.
But to me, maybe, I mean, I don't know if you saw it, but Keswick did manage to get it briefed, basically, that if they didn't sack Emery, he was off, you know. And he wanted Wenger out far earlier than it happened.
Wanted Wenger out.
So in some ways, it does seem like there is.
We know he does, you know, throw his little toy out.
They are so marginalised, and of course they're not on. They're instantly dismissible. They're not on proper non-executive contracts, which are term-based. So
Stan has nothing.
If you want to know who's running Arsenal, it's Raoul, Vinay Moore on the finance corporate side, but he is the partner with on all the decisions, and then going into Josh.
Yeah, it's true.
And Stan Kroenke is just, you know, giving it up completely.
Right. He's left it to Josh, basically.
Yeah.
Well, about this chitter chatter at one point, this has been chit chat about disappointing, I'm trying to think of a name. It was someone from the David O'Dreary or something.
Oh yeah,
that got blocked
by Raoul.
Fuck that. God.
Oh, well, I don't know whether I agree with that or not, Simon, because whether O'Leary was the right person, I actually can see many
the
reasons.
The concept is okay.
But it's the concept.
Yeah, the concept.
And what worries me was the fact that Raoul saw some challenge coming, so I'm not having that.
He
blocked it.
It's absolutely.
He's a personal man. That's for sure.
I am.
Yes.
Oh,
he always had his hair cut
and
me.
It would have been a PR exercise.
My worries, Raoul, basically, he's coming from Barcelona. You know, he thinks he's managing a top 10 European transfer budget, and he's not. He's going to struggle to get into the Europa League this year.
If he loses
on Saturday, he's even further away from getting into the Europa League.
Let's just...
And it's like, well, what the heck? You know, he's ended up...
Can Arsenal afford to buy anyone in this window?
Yes, they could, actually, probably.
Right.
But
what
only
sort of budget have we got?
Well, okay. You can't say it like that. So the way it works is when you buy players, you pay for them on the drip, okay? Right. Quite often. And when you sell players, you receive money on the drip. Kelsey Breeze, Arsenal are very good at making sure that there's always more on the drip for what they buy, and they get more upfront for what they sell. So the last two windows, for example, these football club accounts that came out at the back end of last year showed that we'd spent £99 million on new players in the year to May 19. And I immediately went around everyone like Tim, Nigel, tried to get Phil getting a debate going on the internet saying, how the fuck have they come up with £99 million? Because like, you look at transfer market, you can't come anywhere near that. From Socrates, Guendouzi, Torreira, and Lino. What? £99 million? What the hell? Where's that come from? And like Tim rightly said, there was somewhere, there was a quote about 12 million of agents. And if you go behind the numbers now, you can see that there's a big jump in the provisions number, which probably means that there's been some bonuses triggered, maybe Guendouzi, maybe because we got to the Europa League final and there was some like trigger payments on some other players. But it's still, like, it's a huge number. You said, wow, that was a good 100 million quid spent on those four. It's like,
But I know there's a drifting. The question was, well, my question to you was just, what? How much could, what's the price of player we could go for?
Right, so basically, from those accounts, from what we can see from those accounts, and what we know we spent last summer, which is quoted as another net 90 million quid, net what we sold, and the net 80 million quid we spent in the year to May, that's like 170 million quid, right? And at the time, we had about 100 million quid in the football club accounts and another 60 odd in the property companies, which technically is always available, but just worryingly never ever seems to end up in the football club accounts. Well, maybe it's lent to it. Maybe I'm being unfair. Maybe during the course of the season, when the season ticket money is unwinding, the club needs some money to get it through the low periods when its income and its expenses don't marry out. Maybe it's lent it then, I don't know. But so there's some sort of just about balance at the end of all that. And you could say, but that means we probably could still afford to buy a player because we could buy him on the never never, eating into next year's transfer budget. You see what I mean? Summer 2020's budget. We could use some of that. But I suspect what's overriding it all now is saying, well, hold on, guys. You know, there's a real, real chance we're not going to make Europa League this year. I mean, let's be honest, it is. Look at that league table. Sheffield United on Saturday. I'll be delighted to see us beaten 2-0.
Followed by Chelsea away.
You know, look at that. Yeah, it's going to be a dogfight. Europa League itself is hellishly difficult this year. It's got AX in it, it's got Inter in it, it's got
almost don't got Man in it.
Two leggers, us in it, or we're even going to get past Olympiacos. And you know, if we have a batch of injuries, we're dropping ACLs, we've dropped three ACLs in 12 months. That was another thing I had against Ruhl. How come we suddenly started getting ACLs?
You can't blame that on Ruhl.
Well, he's in charge of football. He's in charge of fucking football. No, hold on, we all had a go at Wenger. When Wenger was in charge of football, we all said, fuck me, Arsene, how come our players are always injured?
Did Arsene
have three players drop ACL in one 12-month
Probably
period?
Not.
Absolutely. So what's changed then? How come we're dropping ACLs? And we're still halfway through the season. So anyway, yes, we could spend some money, but we've got this Europa League. If we miss out on that, we drop at least 30 million. More than that, because we're probably dropping the commercial deals with the shirts.
There's
and
no
letters.
Substitute for that gate income. There's no substitute for that UEFA. You're going to drop at least 10 million. 45 million, Simon.
Based on historic figures, I'm already taking down for this year. Last year, through to May, we earned 37 million on the Europa League. Okay, that alone.
And the gate
money is at least 10. Yeah. If you include the club level tickets, and although there's a lot of gaps in the club, it's true. Yeah. But it's roughly about 10. So that would have been 47 last year. This year, I'm already saying, whoa, we're going to be way below 20 million on the Europa League anyway, because we've got Man U and Wolves in it. We won't get such a big
Not going to go so far.
Not going to go so far. So, yeah, and the club is running at a loss before it sells players. Yeah, even with the new deals. Yeah.
Because of the wage bill.
We've got the new deals from, because of the lack of income, basically. Yeah. I mean, we've got the new deals from Adidas and Emirates this year, which have come in and will give us like extra income, 30 or 35 million odd. There's a new TV deal, which is giving us a little bit more money as well, from May 19 to this coming May. But we're still, you know, only going to make a profit because we sold Iwobi and a bunch of kids in the summer.
So you think they won't sign in January?
They'll be nervous unless they're really confident.
So, and I don't know whether it was made up today or not, but the sort of thing is going to be like a John Stones on loan.
Well, you've got one question about these ACLs. I mean, we had a good laugh about it, but are the players ever coming back from them? Yeah, I mean, I know we say, oh yeah, it's 9 months. It's bullshit. Look at Bellerin, look at Holding. Yeah, are these players? And now Chambers is in that category. Are they ever going to come? Did Welbeck ever come back?
He's a shoulder.
He's always broken.
Yeah. No, but Tierney has some long-term groin hamstring problems.
Does he?
Yeah, as well as his dislocated shoulder, which needs pinning. Yeah, are you ever going to get your ACL guys back to the level that they were? well, they weren't even perfect then. They were still work in progress. So maybe you take the chance.
They say Bedouin's pace. Salt it. Bedouin's lost the pace.
But that's it. Exactly. We've seen it before. We saw it with Theo when he did his ACL. He never had that. He never had that kick of pace, and they don't ever have that kick of pace. I think Bedouin's shot, frankly, and not really do.
And I think, Why are we saying earlier? Is it the physical preparation
of the players and their monitoring by the medical staff?
But also putting ourselves in difficult situations where we're not on top of the game, we're chasing it, and there's always last ditch and hospital passes come in, and then there's all this. I mean, you see, for example, Guendouzi finds himself often in a situation where he's suddenly like, oh shit, I've got the ball and two opponents or three opponents around me. I don't know what to do. And he sort of does some kind of backs into them and falls over, something like that. We seem to put ourselves physically a bit in jeopardy on the pitch a lot by being kind of behind the game. Do you know what I mean?
The point is that now, with a small squad of 20-odd players, it's a real issue because of three of our youngest boys. Defensive prospects, yeah, with the old David Luiz laugh and Socrates, yeah, blimey. So yes, yeah, you could say, well, if you can get Stones at a bargain, or you can get someone that you might say is a long-term fit in there.
But it's Wheeler dealing rather than we're not going to say, right, there's Van Dijk, there's a £75 million. Even if they're out there, we can't.
If the opportunity was there, I guess they may well decide to go.
I don't even know if those are the sort of, you know, the superstar players. I mean, personally, if we were going to go into the market for anyone, I'd almost like some kind of, you know, maybe a bit of, I don't sound a bit silly, say sort of British players, but some sort of like, you know, simple, I'm going to pass the ball quickly, I'm going to do my job, I'm going to do it well, nothing flash, and let's get this cog moving.
Well, there's a couple of midfielders you buy from Leicester.
For example.
I'm not sure whether. Well, I think Leicester have got a good chance of hanging on to them for one more year if they give them Champions League football. But also, you know, I'm not sure that Arsenal are going to have the money. If they become available, there are other clubs in England with more.
All you get in January, generally, are problems that people want to unload. Oh, Thomas Lamar, on 90 million deadline day 2 years ago, boy available at half price. Stones, who everyone's even forgot exists.
Right, I've got to give a name check here. We've got a couple of questions, so I must shoehorn these in. It's relevant to what we're talking about. Jonathan Houseman, who often contributes, he tweets, after failing to support Unai last January, after losing half his back four and giving him Denis Suarez, will they learn this time to give us the best chance of Europe's success? Josh made a big point about how aggressive they told the executive team to be over the summer. He's been silent this time. So
I think that's partly been answered. I mean, they were aggressive.
I'm just name checking.
You know, you've got to be intelligent aggressive.
It's a good question.
And I don't think we'll see anything this transfer window other than maybe a wheeling dealing, so a loan or
a Kim Kallstrom type.
Yeah.
We're in the corner, we're on the ropes, we're being pummeled, right? We're trying to get through the season, get to the summer, see who we're going to lose because they're going to
play. Can we do it with three central defenders? One of them, Holding.
No.
Right.
No, definitely.
Well, then we're not going to do it. We get somebody.
I was very surprised when Panos went out.
Well, I thought the John Stones thing had some logic to it.
I think Stones...
He's been on the bench.
On a loan.
I thought John Stones on loan.
Why would City loan?
Hang on, John Stones.
Because we're not rivals.
You've been saying John Stones a lot. You like
John Stones. Is he coming back from injury?
No, he's fit.
He's now fit and he's just on the bench.
I don't know.
And apparently he's very close to Arteta.
Oh, okay. Well, that would be interesting.
Now, Simon said, the first thought that went through my mind was, hang on, rivals don't lend other clubs players in a January window. But then I thought, Arsenal and City, we're not rivals, we're in different paradigms.
Stones gets some game time, they can sell him for a better price in the summer, maybe.
And aren't they short central defenders?
You'd have thought so, yeah, because Laporte's still out, isn't he?
They've had Fernandinho in the back, so I don't think that one's good.
Well, I think a player like Stones would be just what we need, actually.
It is a worry. I mean, Ars Vlog said today, it's spot on. Everyone, how are we going to go? We've seen it so many times with Arsene, we saw it with Dick last year. Please, not again, running out of defenders.
Right, I'm going to change the topic a little bit. Do we see anything of George Graham in Arteta?
What?
Yeah.
Where's that one come from?
Well, it's basically the idea...
We did see 1-0 to the
that
Arsenal.
He has organised...
That's a bit brutal.
He's organised the defence.
That's a kick of men in the nuts. What is
I had a lot of time for George myself.
I've got a lot of time for George.
He thinks he's kept light, and you're saying, look at George.
No, I get that feeling myself.
About the two titles in a,
I mean, for example, at half time against Leeds,
Rule gets all the
he parts. Did the whole vocal bit, you know?
If Arteta was George Graham, the haircuts would have happened by now, wouldn't
they? That's true, yeah. Okay, it might be George Graham minus the haircuts.
All right, I'll leave that one then.
But don't forget, Arteta did once have long hair as a player, and he used to tie it back with a bow.
I think
so he might be... Yes, I've got this picture. Have a look at him as an Everton player when he first started playing.
In seriousness, I think we're back to the question about... I think we're back to the question about Arsenal-type players. But we're just talking about proper modern professional footballers and proper modern professional managers. And proper professional managers expect their players to run, work hard, stick discipline, play the lines, be tied together with bits of string. You know, you could quite happily see the back four plus, you know, Torreira and Xhaka tied with a bit of string.
Get the string out.
And then need to tie a bit of bloody string around Pepe as well. That's what I'd say.
Right. So you might have to get a junction, wouldn't you? You'd sort of string all over the place.
Right, I'm going to do my other name check. We have sort of discussed this, but just to get him in, Pete Mountford tweeted, does it look like we finally have a coach who's concerned with instructing his players without the ball and game management? Now, I'm going to bring us back to that idea of rolling around on the floor, okay, diving. I'm going to extend it to tactical fouling. Arteta's actually, I mean, that's what Man City do. And it works with them.
But they also play very good football.
Well, we've got to try and
so
do
don't
that.
Have to do it that much.
Well, no, I disagree, actually. I think you'll find if you watch a Man City game against a top team, there is a lot of tactical fouling and a lot of time wasted.
Spurs did it.
Killing momentum.
Yeah.
Now, we haven't done that for, well, probably since maybe ever. Frankly,
no.
But if I not try and tactical foul, I'd get it wrong. And
well, this is the problem.
Who's on the yellow card?
We're
you can't compare City with Arsenal again, or Liverpool, because they're teams that they will go out and try and get the second goal first, and then they'll start killing the game.
Our problem is
that we do that stuff, and we don't do it very well, and we do it when we're 1-0 up, and that it's. Look. Do you know what? I'd rather see us play football and go 2-0 up. Call me old fashioned.
Right. No, I call you naive.
I could say there is no doubt that Arteta has brought in the Man City gamemanship, but it's something that the Spurs used to do and really pissed me off under Pochettino, because they used to get away with it as well, even worse than City sometimes. I always felt, yeah, you take the player down, take him out off the ball. Chelsea have always done it. Bloody Terry and Co in the dark arts in the penalty area. And we're clearly doing it. One thing I thought was really interesting about the Palace game was just this craziness that happened with our 22 fouls and our inability from minute 35 to 60 odd to actually make a freaking tackle without it being a free kick. And it's obviously Ober got sent off. And it's obviously part of what he's trying to get them to do.
What do you think Ober was doing there in that particular?
Well, he was trying to win the ball, take the ball off. He was trying to put the pressure on.
Yeah,
It's part of the instruction.
Yeah, be more physical, be more like Jerry.
It's part of the play. Yeah. It's what he's had in the nuts. We're not up to it. We're not capable of making those tackles. Whereas Palace were constantly somehow nicking the ball, and we were going, "Oh man, where's my free kick?" You know, no, ref was letting it go, and every time we did it, it was like. And then the ball came sailing in, and then finally they score a goal. And so that is a real problem. But
I did like the fact that
you can teach modern players that.
I heard you said like less of this flicky stuff. Which I mean, Aubameyang is that's one of my criticisms of him and some of the players. You know, this I'll do a little flick even though there's no one there, and we do that quite a lot, and it doesn't go to anyone.
Ramsey
occasionally it can work.
The master.
He just kicked the ball in touch for no reason sometimes.
Why haven't we talked about Lacazette? If we're going to talk about things, we should be talking
about
bloody Lacazette. Jesus, he's bloody disappointing. He keeps giving us stupid fouls that cost us He gave away the free kick that cost us against Chelsea that one ended up in the back of the net, which was a pointless. He loses the ball, he comes thundering back into half, bundles someone over, free kick. Go.
Well, yeah. It's a bit Malcolm McDonald, I feel, Lacazette. He actually has the same physique. No, I mean, when Malcolm McDonald at Arsenal, not Newcastle.
He's going to be happy about that, Lacazette.
No, but he will score the odd goal. He will turn and do, and he can get the odd, like, a
poacher goal. Well, he was playing the season last year.
Well, yeah, last year. Maybe last year. But
it's a pretty shit season.
But it's like the ball is bouncing off his shins a bit. Moment. It's not like doesn't seem like he's all that settled. Although the ball he put through to Aubameyang for the goal, the little dummy and the shimmy and the goal, well, that was great. I mean, so
I think he looks fat and he looks unfit.
The next three games have been the making of it, because last year Emery basically shared it around, whereas this year it's been quite clear that Aubameyang is the main striker and Lacazette has to fit around it more and hasn't been playing as much and it's knocked his confidence. But the next three games, he is going to lead Arsenal's attack. So he's got to prove that he's worth it.
I think Martinelli will get
the scars. This goes back. I still think that, you know, Arsenal, you can take so much of Arsenal's problems back to the transfer window 2 years ago, you know, the Ozil contract.
No, he's just trying to get
Mkhitaryan.
He's just trying to get Gazidis.
The Mkhitaryan contract.
You know, still our second highest player, paid player, still probably getting paid 100k a week while he's not with us.
Come in,
Roma aren't paying that. But even then,
it's time for your
when we bought Pierre Aubameyang, he's a really important player for us. But we had Lacazette as a striker. Yeah. We had no central defenders.
We
had an awful midfield, and yet we loaded in on a position we already had.
Yeah.
And the squad is so unbalanced. Yeah. And they've, you know, what?
Well, it's just disease.
Clearly, next year.
Ivan in panic mode.
And Wenger
in panic mode. Give me a striker. I don't need. I'll score more goals.
That was a bit of Arsenal.
Look, that's Ivan saying we're the shit. Help me here. I need to get new deal signed with Emirates and
Adidas.
How am I going to do this? Well, step one, let's get Ozil on board, and then two, we can shoehorn off the back at the end with Mkhitaryan. They all neatly fell into place as a sort of strategy of blew horrendous amounts of cash and wages and created an ongoing imbalance.
And then they did all of and then somewhere between
to get the new deal,
Gazidis and Real, they then broke the first commitment that Real made, which was if you've got less than 2 years and you don't sign, you're sold. So Lacazette and Aubameyang have run through that deadline. I cannot think that after this summer they'll both still be at the club. But Lacazette's next three games is over to you, Sunshine.
Okay. I mean, you said that you believe Torreira will be the only midfield player at the start of the season after next.
I disagree. I think Brindisi will be there. I think Arteta will turn Brindisi
Into a player. Starter rather than there.
The way I see it, with the age profile of the current first team, there will have to be a significant turnaround. I'm struggling to see how we're going to do it unless we've got one of the best scouting operations in Europe. Because money-wise, we're not going to get a lot for these players. And to buy younger is not going to be cheaper unless we really do find...
Well, if you're not in the Europa League and you're not in the Champions League, you can probably get players cheaper.
Because
are they the players you want? You want players that will take you into... We'll stay in the second.
We're back to Leicester and Brendan Rodgers. Yeah, did anyone want Chowdhury?
We bounced out the super young scout.
Yes.
Who actually has signed some very good young players.
Yeah.
You know, in favour of Raul and his agent mates.
Which is worrying. Another worry.
Which is another one of the things is not, I think, picked up on enough.
Right.
About the changes, but that little power struggle, I don't think was to our advantage. Because you're right, it's not going to be big money to spend this time. It's going to be about canny signings, isn't it, rather than big signings.
Well,
the problem with a so-called canny signing is it's a lot easier to get it right when you spend 75 million on a Van Dijk than when you spend 40 million on sort of the next category down, because there's a reason why they're 75 million. It's because everyone knows they're bloody good. You spend 40 million,
you can go wrong. Well,
yeah. You can spend 75 million on someone.
If you're wanting a Chowdhury or someone like that, someone big in the midfield, you're going to lose Xhaka. You want some presence there. You're looking, we've already talked about the central defenders. You're looking for spine. We're into spine. Oh my, spine costs.
Because the idea of this poor lad, who's actually also injured, is going to arrive from France at age 19 and get thrown into the Premier League and sort out our central defence is just crazy.
Man.
Right, I'm going to ask a straight question here. Where do you believe, league position wise, Arsenal will finish this season? As in 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th?
Optimistically, 7th.
7th.
6th.
Simon?
Anywhere between 7th and 11th.
Okay. We'll take that as 8th for the sake of argument.
Well, there's a point between them at the moment. You've got to be
realistic there. Well, 6th would have been real, 6th would be real progress.
6th guarantees Europa League. 7th depends on what happens with the FA Cup winner.
Well, hang on.
And you go into that preliminary round where you go somewhere like Liechtenstein.
Yes, there will be a qualifying round. Did Leicester beat Villa in the semi-final first leg?
Drew 1-1.
I didn't think the League Cup mattered. It's only the FA Cup.
No, I think the League Cup.
No.
It doesn't get Europa anymore.
It's only the FA Cup.
So the FA Cup against Europa.
Oh, okay. That's changed. Right.
Well, would it be a good thing just to take a year out of the Europa Cup?
No, not for money reasons.
Not for money reasons. You've got £40 million hole in your
Where have you been?
And you've got everyone else out the door.
But it's all right, we'll all get short haircuts and run around in Arsenal.
We could all be tourist riders. Right.
So they've all gone. And then you get a load of Arsenal men coming in for the following season.
Right, I'm going to give you a couple of scenarios here, a couple of records. Liverpool, right? They play Man City on the 4th of April. If they are not defeated there, they will match the 49 game unbeaten run.
When do they play Arsenal?
Right, Arsenal is the 2nd of May, and by that time, if they haven't been beaten, it would be the invincible season.
They would have already done it, would be too late. So it's not in our hands.
The 49ers isn't. No, the 49 game record, that's out of our hands.
I've got a funny one actually. I reckon we're going to beat Liverpool.
Right.
Okay. I really do. Don't ask me why.
Well, it's 2nd of May. There might still be. They'll be champions. They'll be possibly in Champions League semi-final.
I can see us beating Liverpool 1-0.
So who are the teams who can stop them beating the 49?
Well, to be honest, quality teams, as in probably just Man City.
United can do it if I've got to go there.
They've been there.
It all depends, doesn't it, really, on when Liverpool switch to concentrating on retaining their
Champions League.
Depends on that. And where they are, it's all
12 games.
Can they dodge injuries?
They are
phenomenal.
We almost look at them as aren't they trying to steal our doctor at the moment?
Oh, really? They can have him as far as I'm concerned. Yeah. They can have some ACLs to go with him.
Can he take the 3 ACLs?
Having said that, the ox, didn't the ox get injured there?
It is the most amazing.
He did.
Is it the most amazing team ever in English football? Because it's not good. I mean, the Invincible is a great record, but what, it was 17? What was the points finished?
Well, 12 draws.
12 draws.
Yeah, draws.
They're not going to have 12 draws.
No, they are.
They've had one draw.
Last year, they came runners up with a points total that would have given a title win every season, basically ever.
Van Dijk and Alisson, the best signings ever.
Now,
any football club and ever will be.
Don't say that. We could have signed Van Dijk, as we all know.
Well, we could have signed everyone, couldn't we?
Everyone had a cup of tea with Arsenal.
I could have had any for everyone who said we could have signed.
He's still doing it.
Guardiola, Klopp should be our manager.
Even when he gives interviews now, he's still.
Do you remember when Raheem Sterling and Wally Walcott were seen as the same level of player?
Right, I'm going to give you some long-term hope, all right? We're going to go back 3 years in time. Where were Liverpool? Okay? The point being, 3 years ago, they were nothing special.
Klopp was there, though, wasn't he?
He was there, but what had he done? What had he won? No, no, he'd been there a season and a half by that
His time. First season, they weren't in Europa League.
No, and they finished eighth in the Premier League. So in the second season, they weren't in Europe either. He came in October, from memory, I think, or November. But anyway, what I'm really asking, does it give Arsenal hope, looking at Liverpool, that the right combination of circumstances can lead to success, or does it require a more supportive owner? Now, you've got to correct me here. Has John Henry injected funds, or have Liverpool been self-sufficient?
Yeah, no, they're going for soft loans.
The owner has been financially
supporting for the standstill.
Soft money in for the stadium. Yeah, but they backed him with Alisson.
Yeah, but it's using the money.
Alisson and Van Dijk, I mean, come on. Yeah, I know you can say that was the money from
Coutinho
as well. I mean, they dealt the transfer market. We all forget how they dealt Suarez and Coutinho. And the way they spent that money, at the end of the day, it was about they put huge money on players and got them all right, and on a manager. They got
the game is increasingly moving to a world where the rich get richer and Arsenal fall out at that level. But in effect, Arsenal run the same business model at about the same size. So in theory, 2 or 3 years of fantastically shrewd transfer dealing and inspiring manager, Arsenal could get there, because the baseline is still quite hard compared to the rest of the game. Whereas if you're at Leicester, it's like an unbelievable achievement, but they're kind of above their level now. So yes, but you have to get all the stars aligned.
I think we might have a financial base, we might have a coach base. I come back to it, my worry is about rule and the football buying side and the player trading side. And yeah, Liverpool got that so phenomenally right.
And
Leicester have got it phenomenally right.
And there's more
right.
competition out there.
And there is a
than
lot
ever.
More.
I mean, when we built the Emirates, and we kind of almost thought that we were heading to a duopoly world, Manchester United were rich with the income, and Arsenal would be rich with the stadium. Yeah. You know, Spurs have got a better stadium now, they've also got a better training ground. You know, England ditched Colney. It's much, much better because it's been bought more recently. I mean, Everton won't give up. I mean, Usmanov's money is increasingly
going in there.
But they've just got permission for the 55,000 stadium on the long term new training ground. Leicester have got enough there.
They're
mid-sized. Chelsea, he's still supporting. And they've got great players coming. Exactly. Sooner or later, Manchester United will be like a chimpanzee in a typewriter giving Shakespeare. Because there's so much money there. So the problem for Arsenal is, yes, the financial situation is there, but where I do worry for them is you could easily see Arsenal coming fifth or sixth for another 4 years.
No, what can I say? The Europa League will become like the new fourth place. It will be. Sorry. It's just because you've got a bigger pool of teams playing for those spots. Yeah, we always say, bloody hell, top four, shit. Yeah, that's a long way off.
It does make the game more interesting, though, doesn't it?
Of course it does. It makes our league the best in the world. That's why it's still so all right.
And that's why we've got to watch this awful
Super League idea.
Because the only watchable league in Europe is the English Premier League, because you don't know what you're going to get. Sheffield United come to Arsenal, even if we win, we're still behind Sheffield United in the league.
On a footballing level, on the pitch, teams like Liverpool and Man City, when you watch them play, they are on the front foot. And I mean, what Guardiola and Klopp have done is he's incentivized his players to play very fast, rapid, pressing, forward football. When we have the ball, I still see us. Yes, we've put our back line up, but we're still passing it about, going backwards, sideways, dawdling. There's a lot of dawdling. And not that sharp, incisive, we're going to have it attitude. Now, my hope is that Arteta can really instill that into whatever team he has. That maybe we can then, because ultimately it's the 90 minutes on the pitch that matters. All the other stuff, yes, it's important because it's what you have on the pitch that to do it. But ultimately, if Leicester can do it, if you look at Wolves now, the way they're playing, you look at, teams that in the past you'd say, so what? Southampton have been playing, quite impressively lately. Southampton. Yeah. Well, if they come to Highbury, we've got to go, we're worried about it. I mean, they beat us, didn't they? I mean, you know, Southampton the best team than Arsenal. Draw. I mean, fuck.
We salvaged the last minute draw with Lacazette's last goal.
Oh, that's right. Sorry.
Tough game we've got coming up when we go to them.
Sheffield,
that's
playing really well. That's why I say 7-11. Seriously, it's,
right?
It's so very competitive league.
Ultimately, it's that I think there's a mentality of going for the best form of attack of defence is attack, and we go one up and we start softly.
No, I think we try to score with second,
but
run out of steam.
We've failed so far in doing so. So that's what we need to do is just that finishing.
The killer question.
The killer question now is
the football, is football at least something you want to talk about, think about, engage in debate about again?
Yes.
Thank fuck.
Well, yes.
That's what I say. Thank fuck.
Yes, it is. When you say that, when you ask the question, I'm still less enthusiastic than I was 5 years ago.
Of course. But, you know, anything's better.
Well, I think that's...
I watched the game, and am I really going to go?
Could change.
There's no Ivan. Ivan is bloody gone. Yeah, Milan is ruining Milan. That's got to be a good thing.
Emery's gone. That's just fantastic.
Hang on.
He's doing very well out there.
But what's quite interesting, what Sheffield United, then Newcastle, then their game, you know, are we going to go back to sort of 45,000 in the stadium, a bit flat? Because there was an energy for Chelsea United. But they're big games anyway.
He's going to worry.
They fed off.
He's going to worry. Arteta's going to worry that
if we have a bad result or two
over the weekend and then with Chelsea, you know, bad Sheffield United game, bad Chelsea game.
If we lose at Chelsea...
He's in his shit out and so is the team.
Well, I mean, the only thing you can say is that he has at least had a week now.
He has had a week.
Between games, which in theory is what he wants.
Yeah.
Obviously, next week isn't looking good because we've got Chelsea on.
Chelsea have been shit at home.
No, but the point being, there's no time between games. What Arteta requires is a break so that he can actually instill stuff rather than just plan for an individual.
By the way, we haven't even mentioned beating Man United 2-0, which is something that.
Well, probably one of the worst Man United teams.
I've never seen such a bad Man United.
I know, but imagine we beat Man United after the season we've had to at least, you know, that
win.
Arsenal
beat eighth place team 2-0.
I know.
They didn't even have a shot, did they?
No, they weren't bad. They were even worse than us.
First half, no
they
shot.
Are, they
I
are.
Said to the local butcher, who's a Man United fan, I said, you couldn't even beat Arsenal.
Right, gentlemen, we've been talking for an hour, so I think
we
could indeed.
But could people listen that long?
That's another question. I'm going to wrap it up here with a Gooner plug time. And the current issue includes our traditional free calendar for 2020 on the theme of the history of the Arsenal crest.
A great calendar, I would say, Kev.
Thank you, sir. It will be on sale at the Sheffield United game next weekend from our trusty sellers and can also be bought through our store page on the onlinegooner.com website.
Can I just ask people at this point, what is everyone's favourite crest, Arsenal crest of all time?
Ooh. I like the old 30s letters myself.
The AC.
The Herbert Chapman one.
Yeah, that's nice.
Anyone in preference? Or?
I think the classic, you know, with the sort of gothic writing, Victoria Concordia Crescent, with the green line through the bottom.
But with
the fleur-de-lis, for me, that's, you know, that's the one that does it, which we had for quite a long time in our lifetimes.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it's the one before they turned the gun around, before the current one.
Well, they just did a variation on the theme of the crest with all the stars and...
But there was that era in the 70s where it was just a gun on the back.
Well, it was just on the shirt. I mean, the calendar is a combination of badges and crests.
Well, really, Chelsea and Tottenham continue to do that. Did you see Chelsea the other day in their old kit? They played in a kit with absolutely no sponsorship on it. Who was it against? Someone, it was FA Cup, that's right, and they did 50 years of something, separate sponsor for the cups. There was no sponsor on the shirt and they wore a retro kit, and I hate to say it, I know it's a Chelsea kit, but it looked quite good,
didn't they?
Nice to do. I'd like to see Arsenal play against
them. Right, ain't going to happen. Right, so anyway, right. You could also subscribe for next season through our website store, as our campaign to raise enough subscribers to ensure we can continue has now begun. So if any of you listening are current subscribers have not as yet renewed, we will be emailing you with a gentle nudge at some point before the end of February. We value your support, and the price of the annual subscription for the Gooner is less than the cheapest lower tier seat to watch Arsenal at home to Watford. So for that, you get half a dozen 68-page issues delivered to you through your door every season. You cannot say fairer.
It's about 12 cappuccinos, isn't it?
Yes, it's a bargain, basically.
Bargain.
As ever, a reminder, you can contact us regarding anything to do with the podcast via Twitter at Gooner Podcast and email godgoonerpodcast@gmail.com. Many thanks for the questions and topics submitted for today. With that, it is goodbye from Tim.
Goodbye.
Simon.
Bye.
And Mustafa.
Au revoir.
We'll be back in February with another monthly edition. And for those that can't wait, you can follow the more regular video podcasts offered on the Gooner Fanzine TV YouTube channel, hosted by Leif Youssef.
Much better than Arsenal TV, isn't it? Arsenal Fan TV.
So I'm led to believe.
What is it?
I wouldn't know. What is this AFTV thing? So with that, this is your host, Kevin Witcher, saying goodbye and thank you for listening. La-di-da-di-da, la-di-da-di-dee. All good friends and jolly good company. Well, hey!